Good morning and welcome to the May 1, 2023 meeting of the Chelan Public Utilities Commission. All five commissioners are present, and I might add we were here 5 minutes early, which is amazing. And the staff with us today is our manager, Kirk Hudson, acting clerk of the board, Lisa Sanders, and our general counsel, Eric Walquist. I would ask all to check your electronic devices to make sure that they're placed in the silent mode to assist in not disrupting today's meeting. And we do value public input at our meetings, and we'll be providing an opportunity for the public to have input at the end of our session, and at the if we have an afternoon session, we'll give opportunity both morning and afternoon, but we may only have a morning session today. That is to be determined. If you wish to speak, we ask that you provide your name and address for the record and come up and take the mic that's sitting on the table to provide that information, and we additionally ask that you limit your comments to 3 minutes. Additionally, if you wish to speak to any of the agenda items today, I'll provide that opportunity at the end of each segment. Our flag salute and safety minute today will be brought to us by Nick Winter.
All right, please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. I'm Nick Winters, New Media Communications in the Communications Department, and I'm going to start you off with the safety minute. So whether you're at the job site, riding your bike, skiing the slopes, or even riding your horse, make sure you're always wearing a helmet. It might sound like a no-brainer, but a surprising number of people still choose to leave their helmets behind. I speak from experience when I say head injuries aren't to be taken lightly. They can impact your work and your life for prolonged periods of time. Make sure to routinely check that your helmet is still in good condition, isn't impaired due to an impact, or hasn't outlived its recommended lifetime. And when choosing a new helmet, look for an enhanced safety features such as MIPS technology, which stands for Multi-Directional Impact Protection System, an added feature that can redirect the overall rotational friction during an impact. It's relatively easy to find a helmet that has MIPS technology. The helmet usually features a small yellow sticker that reads MIPS in black lettering. So use your head, be safe, and wear a helmet. Thanks.
Thank you. And how long have you been with us now?
1 year and 4 months.
And where'd you come from? Who are you?
I'm Nick Winters. And I'm born and raised in Wenatchee, and went to school at WSU and came right back and got to work.
Cool.
Yeah, been here ever since.
Welcome aboard.
Thank
First
you
time we've met.
So. All right.
Thanks. Nick, before you go off, if I can, I'd just like to make a comment on your presentation. I think it's especially pertinent for skiers, as you're talking about, but motorcycle riders and others. I volunteered ski patrol for 9 years up at Mission, and we saw a lot of head injuries. Yeah. And sent a lot of people down the hill that didn't think they were hurt, but turns out later that they were suffering yeah. pretty significant injuries. So you can't be careful enough when it comes to your head and get a noggin protector. So I agree.
Yeah, there's actually two people I know at the district who have active concussions from riding their horse right now, so just sparked my interest.
Yeah.
Were they riding their horse or not staying on their horse?
Both. All right.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Nick's in our communications department. He does a lot on the video and social media side of things. Does a great job.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Might add, and it's not on the agenda, and I think there's probably a number of people in the room here that know one of our fellow commissioners from across the river, Ron Skagen, thinking of safety issues. Gary has more of the information, but is involved in a freeway accident last week down in the Tri-Cities, and is, last we knew, is still in the hospital with 9 broken ribs.
Seven
broken ribs. And so our thoughts are very definitely with him, and I think we as a commission are going to shoot him a card, and I'm, after our meeting, going to try to connect with him, because you know, he and I were elected at the same time. Our paths crossed a lot as we were campaigning, believe it or not, and sometimes in the campaign stores. So anyway, just thought you might want to be aware. Next on our agenda is the approval of the agenda, and management has suggested several resolutions that potentially could be, get moved to the consent agenda, and those are resolutions 9, 10, 11, and 14. Does that meet with the approval of the commission? And at the And since there were no resolutions previously on the consent agenda, we won't ask if there's anything we want to move off the consent agenda. If it meets with the approval, we will consider those items moved. And my understanding, we have a full house today because there's potentially a number of people in the room that were here to speak to some of those agenda items. And if they want to hang around, they are more than welcome to, but you don't have to. So we will consider those four agendas moved to the consent. Item 3, Orderly District Performance Plan.
So this is, as we're introducing it, I'll invite Brett up. He's the first reporter, but this is our quarterly review of where we're at on the District Performance Plan. These are the highest priority items for staff, and I will say that as we get ready to roll through this, we're only going to hit the exceptions unless there's ones you want to talk about. We'll talk about the ones that are either have been completed in the first quarter or we're concerned about or are behind. Those are the ones we're going to spend some time on, but you're more than welcome to ask questions about any of them. And at this point, we're about 78% complete or on track, which is about normal for the first quarter. Really, the second quarter kind of really is the telling point of where we're going to end up at the end of the year. So we're about where we normally are at this point. With that, I'll turn it over to Brett.
Good morning. Brett Bickford, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. We'll be starting under item number 2, invest in creating long-term value. Our Rocky Reach C11 turbine hub repairs, central maintenance completed the disassembly per our target goal of by the end of the second quarter, and we've turned that over to the contractor. We found a significant cavitation damage on that unit since it's been operating in the fixed blade mode since 2013. And so we're anticipating, however, that the extra work in the shop at Voith will cause that to not be returned by the end of second quarter for reassembly, so it'll take a little bit longer. Our next item is with unit B3. That's a unit that ARC Craft and our engineers have taken over. And significant discharge liner work on that unit and some mechanical breakdowns are projecting that that unit will not be done until the end of January 2024. So we're pretty sure we won't hit that end of the year target. We completed unit C5 turbine repairs by the end of the first quarter. That unit is operating well and it's ready, and Rocky Reach is now participating fully in the HCP check-in as we had hoped.
Morning, Commissioners. I have the next one. John Stoll, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. This is noting the completion of a draft outline in support of a 5-year wildfire mitigation plan. So that has been presented, and next step is to review what has been presented and work that into the next round of business plans, which will be due at the end of June.
Good morning. Sean Smith, Managing Director of Energy Resources. As part of the energy market evolution, we were to make a decision on participating in SPP Markets Plus Phase 1, which is a day-ahead market. We have decided to join and completed our agreement. We attended our first meeting in April, and drafting has started on the tariff, which we are also participating in.
Are you running the show? Good morning, Commissioners. So I'm Jared Watts. We've met before. I'm really new to the district. And so on our scorecard, you'll see that there are actually 6 that we've marked as yellow, caution statements. The reason that I've marked them that is because because of my newness to the organization. And as I look to try to build and grow and look at our staff, that these were the ones that I've identified as I don't want to say we're 100% we're going to be good. These are the ones we're working on building plans for to make sure that we can accomplish them. There's one that's marked as red, and that is a lagging indicator. It stays away, restricted or transferred. It's injury-based metric, and we have not met our target on that being 1.05. So.
Thank you.
Page 6. Yeah, we're moving fast, so we're on page 7.
Okay.
Bottom of page 7.
Gotcha.
And actually, if the ones, do you have yellow highlighting on the right?
Yes.
That's the way to follow the reporters. Yeah. And Jared did a bunch of them in one.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha. Now I understand. He was fast.
Yeah, he mentioned those ones were all yellow for the same reason. So.
John, again, getting down at the bottom of page 7, this has to do with a red concerning filling vacancies anticipated with the AMI project. We had two specifically. One was the meter shop supervisor, which we did successfully hire, but we're a little bit behind filling what we would be more of a back office support role, which is in process right now.
Ian Fitzgerald, Chief Technology Officer. This next issue, near the top of the page here, has to do with our field workforce management solution. We are a few weeks behind in actually releasing the RFP. I've marked this as caution just because of missing that deadline, that milestone. The deadline, however, is just to actually select a product by the end of third quarter, so there is slack within this requirement. I believe we will make it, but we're a little bit behind. I do want to add that there is a tying application of technology to this, and that's a field technology having tablets in the field. And so I just want to say we actually had a science fair last week that was extremely successful and allowed us to get that base technology. We're in the process of doing a final selection on that by the end of June. But the collaboration really has been unique and a good experience across the district. So I just want to let you know about that success that really accompanies this this task as well.
So, Ian, does that mean you have a fair and different vendors come in and visit with staff and talk about how their product might meet their needs?
So from a high level, I'll go through the process. But we met with all the staff who work in the field. We got these things called personas, learning about how they work in the field and what they're looking for when it comes to technology in the field. We took those ideas and we actually produced 3 proof of concepts. This is a much more challenging task than you'd expect in just taking a tablet, because there's a need for sharing these devices, there's a need to authenticate into it, there's a need to work offline in the backcountry, and then there's a need for just the make it simple, the login for the processes of the users and some of the things they need. So we developed 3 different actual solutions. We have 3 different solutions. The other things that we're looking at is scalability, consumable, the cost to actually per person to actually put these in the field. So all these are being considered. They've got a scoring. People have come back and they've touched them. They played with them. They've had their feedback. 150 people showed up to the science fair last week to test all these. We had almost 100 different returns on comments back that we're now sifting through. And then we'll look at these solutions and go back to the teams and then compromise and where it is best for both the district when it comes to cost and scalability, but also for the user. And so very comprehensive process, but I think it was a success in the fact that it really was a collaboration between everybody.
Yeah, I would just add that it was very innovative in terms of how they approached the field service management concepts and the different options. It was all internal for our employees, and it was trying to get a feel for what would meet their needs, and the idea is what would make them even more productive when they're out in the field away from the office, and how can they instead of writing stuff down on a notebook and then coming back and having somebody enter it in the computer, is there a way they can capture that right out in the field and then it gets loaded into our network and our systems, things like that. And I know Ian says there's some slack, but nobody's slacking on this one, because this is a very aggressive timeline, and there's a lot to be done by the time that deadline comes around.
You know, you piqued a question in my mind, being of the generation that's really technologically challenged. I find it really frustrating maneuvering, one of the things that I found incredibly helpful for me in accessing, getting access to the right place is facial recognition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, as we go through in our utility, you know, how we have secure, data, but yet ease of access, are we looking at things of that nature?
So facial recognition and fingerprint recognition is a tough in to put into a union environment. That's just a difficult environment. And plus there's privacy stuff that should the district be holding on to private information from our employees, like a face and a fingerprint. So we're going away from that. We're actually going to think about just using badges. So you just tap your badge to log into the system. So we already identified you through this badge. And so it allows us to stay away from those very private, controversial topics when it comes to things, but still allow us to authenticate from something we know that we've already allowed you to authenticate through access to the building in some secure environment. So I think it's a compromise that we can simplify it without getting into some of those privacy concerns that we'd be looking at.
All right. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Our next item is in the middle of page 8, and that's developing a project plan to move our electrical engineering data into the DMS system. So that's all of our transmission and distribution engineering information. And with all the other work going on, we're a little bit behind, and so we're projecting that we might not make it by the end of our target goal of 9:30.
Good morning, Commissioners. Bob Shane, Managing Director of Fiber and Telecom. I have number 8, foster a culture of serving the public interest, on the bottom half of page 9. The first item there is the PPP premises passed for Q1 of 2023. We didn't hit that target. Very typical this time of year. We never know what the weather's going to be like in that part of the quarter. It was a little bit tough, but we're able to make those numbers up in April. So we're back on track to meet our targets for the end of the year.
So you moved from being frozen to being flooded.
Pretty much.
Good morning, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. I've got the last one for you this morning, and it is marked cautionary, and it is regarding one of our public power benefit projects, which is the Walla Walla Point Park Sport Court. You might recall that Sport Court will allow us to relocate the basketball courts off of the pickleball area and provide additional access for both types of park users. That does require a FERC amendment. It's a relatively minor amendment to our recreational plan. So we are processing that amendment and working with FERC to hopefully do so quickly so that we can be under construction this fall and get it done before winter. Our fallback plan is to do it this time next year if we're unable to get the amendment in time. We have the same amendment process with the one right below it, which is Riverfront Park. The difference being that we don't plan on constructing starting that project at all until 2024, so that amendment process with FERC doesn't impact that, where this project we really were hoping to try to get it done this year, given the increased popularity of pickleball. Thank you.
If I can just take a second, I mentioned Justin earlier today, congratulated him on the great pickleball courts job you guys have done. I had an opportunity to play on those courts, and they are just world-class, so great job.
Thank you, sir.
I would also add, down on the bottom there, below the quarterly metrics where you see the 78%, you see the blue box. This is where we're adding items that might have come up mid-year. And you might recall on the fiber presentation, we committed to come back and report back to the board on the finalization plan for fiber this fall. And so we debated whether or not to just stick it in here, but I thought it was good to call out separately so that you recognize there might be some trade-off somewhere along the way and things we added along the way that we didn't plan for. So that's how we're going to keep track of them for now.
Very good. Okay, great. Legislative wrap-up.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Got Tracy Yent and Kelly Scott for the legislative wrap-up.
Might, for those of you that aren't on Facebook, I might call out that Kelly Scott had a birthday yesterday, and she wisely, as all women do, does not post her age. So.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Happy birthday.
Appreciate that.
What she didn't know is we were about ready to break into song.
Not again.
Good morning, everyone. Tracy on External Affairs. Going to summarize the 2023 session, which will be the last session that Governor Inslee presides over. He announced this morning he's not running for re-election.
Really?
So we will be watching that closely. Kelly's going to go over some bills of interest, and then I'm going to dive in a little bit into some budget because of what all has happened with the budget this this session. So with that.
Yeah, and I just note, you all know how to reach us. Please do. This is going to be a, we're going to sprint today, but please follow up with us if you have any questions or want to give us a stern talking to. So. Yeah, it was a 105-day session. It ended on schedule on April 23rd. Within those 105 days, the legislature passed two-year state budgets, along with dozens of policy changes focused on housing, healthcare, and public safety. There were 2,302 bills introduced, of which 494 passed. But the session ended on a dramatic note, which you likely read about, with a surprising last-minute failure to pass a must-pass drug possession bill. And that means that, unless a special session is called, the state's current drug law will expire on July 1st, leaving each city to handle drug possession in its own way. So that means that we may be looking at coming back into a special session. In his late-night press conference following Sine Die on the 23rd, Governor Inslee indicated that he would likely be calling them back for a special session to address the drug possession issue. He said he wants legislators to work out agreements on this on their own before bringing them back. And so that special session will likely happen in May. It's important to note that while the governor may call them back to address one particular issue, they can really do whatever they want once they're back. Yeah. It doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of appetite to open up other issues. It's more of a sprint in and out of town and deal with this Blake decision, the Supreme Court drug possession issue. But we shall see, and we'll keep you updated. So the legislature's main job this session was to write and pass the state's three biennial budgets, the operating, capital, and transportation budgets. They did that, and they passed them in the final days of session. The nearly $70 billion general operating budget covers most state programs and salaries, along with schools. The $13.5 billion transportation plan covers construction and repairs, highways and bridges, plus funding for mass transit and the state patrol. And the $9 billion capital construction budget is our construction budget. It includes $670 million for water pollution control projects, $717 million for climate projects, and much more. So this year, there were 22 brand new, newly elected legislators, plus three additional new members that were coming back after retirement. They all returned with a lot of energy and a lot of clear priorities. And for a lot of the folks who were elected a few years ago, this was actually their first time working full-time in person at the Capitol. Now, some of those new members are serving on our energy committees that we follow, and we saw quite a bit of legislation coming out of those committees, keeping in mind that they passed the bulk of these massive decarbonation policies in recent years, so these were smaller, bite-sized, but still pretty large energy bills that they were considering. Tracy mentioned the announcement from Governor Inslee about an hour ago that he will not be seeking re-election, but another headline that late-breaking the last week is that our own Representative Mike Steele is going to be taking a role in his caucus leadership. He was elected the deputy leader of the Republicans in the House. Longtime Republican leader J.T. Wilcox is stepping down from his position, so we'll have a new person there, Representative Stokesbury. So just some people to keep an eye on. Yeah, all bills will go into effect on July 23rd, unless otherwise noted. Between now and May 16th, the governor will review and sign bills passed by the legislature. He has three options. Number one, sign the bill into law. Number two, veto the entire bill. Or number three, veto entire sections of the bill. He does not have line item authority to veto, so he can't remove sentences.
Is there not an option four that he can let it sit and it goes into law without his signature?
Or he can let it sit and it goes into law. Yes, okay. You're correct.
Question. Before we leave, you were talking about the budgets and what was approved. Is there any breakdown as far as how much of those dollars will be spent here in Chelan County?
So we have a little bit of information on the budget. We don't have that level of detail quite yet, okay. But that is going to be one of the things we're talking about today and digging into in the coming weeks.
Okay, it'll just be interesting to see what's going to be spent here.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
So this page lists a lot of things that you have been hearing about for months now, so we're going to move quickly through here, just touching on where each of these bills ended up and how they might impact the district. The Wildfire Mitigation Planning Bill, it passed. To recap, it creates a statewide model for utility wildfire mitigation plans and requires utilities to create their own plans and review them every 3 years. It was signed into law on April 20th. There's a picture of Governor Inslee signing the bill, surrounded by bill sponsors. You can see Representative Dent there, worked really well with the utility industry throughout session on this bill, and then a lot of utility representatives. So we got to a really positive place with this bill, you can see. For us, it means we'll have an opportunity to weigh in with the consultant that DNR is going to hire to come up with this recommended list of elements to be in our plan. So we'll be doing that in the interim. And then it means for you all, you'll be approving every 3 years our wildfire mitigation plan. And we already do have, like John Stoll mentioned, we have that mitigation program in place, and they're working to formalize the rollout plan for it. I don't know the technical term, but we should be ready to engage and comply with this law. HB 1117, you heard a lot about this one. This was the Mossbrucker bill. It has passed. It's been delivered to the governor. We're not hearing, he hasn't signed it yet, but we're not hearing anything indicating he won't. And as you know, it directs state agencies to focus on the risks to grid reliability as part of an existing standing meeting on resource adequacy.
Mike. Sorry, the question was, is that the one that came back this year with no changes on it?
The Mossbrucker?
That's the Mossbrucker bill that passed unanimously last year and was vetoed by the governor.
Right.
She worked directly with his office. I think she softened some language around the risk of rolling blackouts, but substantively, we think it's still an important bill.
Thank you.
Recreational use liability, as you'll recall, this was a Senator Short bill put forward by Grant Peudy, and it would clarify existing liability protections for public recreational use of lands or waters under a FERC hydro license. We weighed in with support throughout the session. It adds three additional recreational uses, boating, swimming, and fishing, to the existing hydro rec liability statute. It passed unanimously in the Senate, it passed the House unanimously, and update since this slide was written, it has been signed by the governor.
A comment on that for your benefit. At our last Mid-C commissioner-manager meeting, the grant commissioners profusely thanked us for our assistance on that bill. So just so you guys are aware.
Thanks for passing that along. That, you know, this is another good year. One thing that Kelly's done is coordinated with the other Mid-Cs throughout this session. They're taking leads on some things that are important to us. We're taking leads on other things that are important. So definitely distributing some of the interest between the three utilities. But thank you for passing that along.
You bet.
Yeah, these next two bills are really siblings, both requested by the governor, both recognizing that our power system is going to need a heck of a lot more transmission capacity and clean energy to come online to meet our decarbonization goals. The transmission planning bill adds several transmission elements to utilities' integrated resource plans and requires utilities to use a 20-year planning window rather than the current 10-year span for transmission planning. Transmission experts from several utilities, including from Chelan, weighed in with the governor's office and bill sponsors to make some recommended changes. Those were incorporated into the bill. It passed the House, passed the Senate as well. On the siting bill, this one creates a Clean Energy Siting Coordinating Council and streamlines the environmental review process for new clean energy projects. We were quietly monitoring this one. It passed the House, passed the Senate, and we're hearing that the governor will be signing both of those bills into law at a ceremony later this week in the Tri-Cities. And then finally, of course, the high heat disconnect moratorium, 1329. This one passed, and it was signed by the governor on April 20th. It prohibits utilities from disconnecting customers' power or water for non-payment on days when the National Weather Service has issued a heat-related warning. The bill also includes a reconnection provision, so customers who have been disconnected can contact their utility and have service reconnected ahead of days when high heat has been forecasted. The bill was introduced at the request of Attorney General Bob Ferguson and led in the House by freshman Representative Charlotte Mena. And when it was first introduced, the bill faced quite a bit of criticism from the utility industry with some operational challenge issues. Even though we, of course, strongly agreed with the intent of the bill to protect vulnerable customers, and it's something that we're already doing proactively at our utilities. Working with other utilities, we were able to get some improvements made to the bill earlier this session. We still do have some concerns about the specific levels of National Weather Service alerts that will trigger the moratorium, and that's something the bill sponsors are aware of and something we'll continue talking with them about as we now begin to work on implementing this new law.
So a few things. Kelly's going to cover a couple items, and then we're going to dig a little bit more into the detailed budget. I jumped the gun. I wasn't supposed to talk.
Okay.
You seem well trained, though.
I know where right to go.
Yeah. We need flashcards. So we like this first one a lot. Broadband matching grants. Capital budget includes $50 million for a competitive grant program for local governments, including PUDs, to use as match funds when applying for federal funding to expand broadband access. And it later in the session, it was changed a bit, which we liked. So now the funding will only go to public entities. And then, of course, Confluence Parkway. I'm sure you all have already been quite aware of this, but this year it was specifically called out and funded with a set timeline. $85 million over three biennium. The first one, this biennium, $28 million. That's just a situational awareness.
Was that in the capital budget or in the transportation budget?
Yeah.
Transportation. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I know I can go. All right. So a couple things. We've talked about the federal funding. And the money that would be flowing through the state. This is a little different, but it adds to that whole discussion around the level of money flowing. The theme to remember at this point is this is a lot of money and a lot of it is new. So when it's new, there's a lot of things that we're going to have to learn to figure out what the programs look like, what the implications are. The state is going to have to do the same thing. But we have renewable portfolio standards been in place for quite a while. We have the Clean Energy Transformation Act, carbon or clean fuel standard, and the carbon CCA that is now we're seeing this first year actually money flowing. So this $1 billion essentially that is now available is finding its way into the budget. So what I wanted to do is just highlight a couple of items and then make sure you know that we are going to be digging into this with associations, individual utilities, and our own, depending on what the issue is. But there's a lot of work that's going to be happening between now and even the next session, closing out this session and figuring out what is going to be happening with much of this money. So it is different than in the past. So just a couple of highlights. First, in the operating budget, about $188 million for electric vehicle infrastructure, incentives, and programs. Snake River Dam removal, the Murray Inslee effort that culminated last year, talking about the potential benefits for salmon for removing the Snake River dams brought up a lot of potential benefits for those facilities being there. So what this budget allocation is, total about $8 million that covers transportation, irrigation, and what would it take to replace the 1,000 to 1,200 megawatts of energy? So they've got a couple years where that money is going to be distributed. You might hear $2 million, but the $2 million is allocated just towards the energy sector.
Is that in the bill? Is it targeted that the replacement of the energy would need to be, as I would call it, baseload energy?
Yeah, let me just, I'll read something I think along those lines. The analysis should include a list of requirements for a replacement portfolio that diversifies and improves the resilience and maintains the reliability and adequacy of the electric power system. So it would go right towards what you're saying, that we have the right type of power.
Maintains the reliability.
Yep. Yeah. $35 million for low-income energy assistance. Hmm. $35 million for low energy assistance and home energy assessments replacement. So there's a lot of this that goes into electrifying and then even changing some of the equipment in homes for more efficient use. Again, we'll have to figure out how that impacts our existing programs, where the money and how the money will be spent here in Chelan County. $74 million for battery and solar grants. And we'll be getting this all to you. This is a high-level summary, so.
Just one question before we get off the low-energy assistance. That $35 million, any of that go into research? And
So this is funding is provided for existing federal low-income energy assistance program grantees provide low-income households with energy utility bill assistance. There are also study bills where Pacific Northwest National Laboratory is going to be involved. But that would be an example when we dig in and understand that a little bit better.
That's separate from this appropriation?
Yeah, I think so on this one. I only have a small write-up on this one.
That'd be interesting to see what the breakdown is.
Okay.
Thank you.
Interestingly enough, also $50,000 for a fusion study. This is basically funding for the Office of Radiation Protection for state readiness of licensing fusion energy projects. So $50,000,
right?
New energy fusion project.
Yeah.
$50,000. Yeah. Under the capital budget, natural resources $2.4 billion. Something that might be of interest to us. Again, it's only a line item right now. Water supply $233 million. That's something that obviously would be interesting to our community. Local infrastructure, public works trust fund. Allocated or $400 million, so that's good. And then a couple million dollars for innovation projects in the energy fund. And then here's one, $7.5 million for regional energy analytics, and this is for Pacific Northwest National Laboratory as one of the examples. $157 million, in addition, $157 million for heat pump, high-efficiency electric equipment rebates, and the list goes on, transportation. So bottom line is money is available. That may or may not translate to changes to our programs, things that we invest in, but we definitely need to look into it because there's a lot here.
So that last one that you quoted for heat pump, now it raised immediately a curiosity question in my mind. We already have programs for conservation here. Will these be potentially additive to what we already have?
I'm not sure how that's going to work yet, but that is what we're going to have to look at. Are these now matching funds that would be made available? I know the information's out there. I just don't have that right here.
Okay.
But this is going to be in Sean's group with Andrew Grissel, a lot of work to assess and figure out how these funds may or may not apply to the programs we have or might lead to more services that we could provide. I just don't know yet.
Commissioners, I just tell you that our normal practice after the end of the session and the work that External Affairs has done is tracking it. Legal teams up with External Affairs, and we do a summary of the bills of interest that have passed that might affect one or more of our departments or programs, and then we take a look at those and try to summarize them and hit the highlights and get them out to the folks responsible for managing those areas. So we haven't started that, and it'll be a new team this year because the Sean Seaman, Melinda Barnes team is no longer available. But I'm sure Kelly will work with Charles O'Daniel in my office, and they'll get that out as soon as possible.
I
just thought it was interesting to look at the amount of effort going into electrify the heat pumps and furnaces and the big push. To me, it seemed like a bigger push than I've seen in a long time. So I just thought that was interesting.
It really will be because, you know, in our county, low power prices were already largely electrified. So now it's becoming more efficient. Where other parts of the state really transitioning to electrify, which impacts what you were bringing up, this reliability capabilities, you know, if we're going to be moving more demand onto the electric grid in addition to electric vehicles and electrifying buildings, it's going to change, continue to change the program. What Kirk has said, you know, the magnitude and velocity of change, this adds to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. And then the one thing I would just add under the budget page there is maybe what you were referring to, Commissioner, but the operating budget includes $300,000 for the Department of Commerce to develop a design for a potential, what would a statewide low-income assistance model look like? Yeah. That follows the release of the Department of Commerce report in March, which found that 250,000 low-income residents in the state were energy burdened. We're already working with our associations on this issue. We're pointing out where we think that some of that data included in the report could use a little bit more context. And we're also trying to emphasize the value, really, of our existing programs and just the importance of local utilities' ability to tailor those assistance programs to our communities. And we'll continue.
Perfect. One of the things I wanted to just, you know, throw out is that as we go down this road, I think it's important for our own utility to look at our program and reevaluate what we do as a utility and what programs are available, what we're actually make available for low income assistance. Whether it's maybe it is, I'm not sure what our program actually entails, but you know, the windows and heat pumps and all those sorts of things that I think it's going to be more and more highlighted as we move forward. It's something that's going to be, you know, with that dollars being spent, certainly we may have legislation submitted next year, and so not only do we need to know how it impacts us, but we also have to have a reassurance that our program is sound and actually better than. It's the way I look at it. So that's my thing.
I think that's right. I think our efforts will be around proactively communicating what we're already doing for our customers in a lot of ways. We'll definitely be talking about that.
And on, and I know you've got another page left on your presentation, or maybe, oh, yeah. But it seems like the appropriate time is right now. After going through this legislative session, and you highlighted the Department of Commerce and the low-income assistance potential, and you know the concerns I think already that we have about the printout we got a few weeks ago. Do you see going forward our greatest emphasis is the greatest challenge slash threat or concern, whatever you want to call it, with our utility in the legislative arena or in the regulatory arena?
Yes.
Yeah.
there's going to be a lot of work and even getting into the technical elements of how these changes are going to change markets, which in turn can influence how the system operates, that interaction between the system, the grid, and the markets. It is going to be different, and it's unclear to me with the four programs that the state has, the Climate Commitment Act, the CFS, CETA, and the RPS, it's unclear to me what other large programs there might be in coming in, maybe something in transmission, I don't know. But now it's taking all of these, and what will that do to our grid? What will it do to the markets? It is unclear to me at this point. Maybe Sean has some insights, but there's other things coming up. So we are in a formation stage with a lot of questions.
Well, and a whole other aspect of the regulatory aside from this is the new L&I rules and how that's going to be how we operate on the ground here. And, you know, the challenges don't seem to be diminishing.
No.
we're also engaging on that and making sure that the state knows about any sort of unintended consequences as they finalize.
Hopefully we can get them beyond knowing about it to caring about it.
Okay.
That's the challenge.
Yeah.
So session's over. we're going to continue to speak with our policymaker friends, and it's worth mentioning just how much we appreciate the active engagement and communication with our 12th district legislators. They're all three of them have a pretty open line of communication with us. We give them updates, and that's been very helpful. Participate in relevant task force. One of those, of course, is that wildfire mitigation process now that's going to happen with the DNR consultant. And so just part of that post-session compliance period is also going to be looking at ways that we can make sure that we're at the table whenever these kind of conversations are happening. Continue to work with associations. This is my first year. Waputa and other folks have been so invaluable to me trying to get up to speed on these issues. I know that a couple of our commissioners are stepping into new roles with Waputa, and we are here to support in any way. Just reach out, and I guess we can just congratulate Commissioner Arsenault for a successful 10-year as president of Waputa. And then, as Eric mentioned, we are going to be working on complying with all of these new laws. We're starting the process now. I'm already meeting with some of his team to come up with a table of any bill that might affect the district. And then we're preparing for next year. We're talking with our contract lobbyists. We're continuing to stay engaged with other utilities to figure out what's going to be the big thing next session. Just stay on top of that.
The big thing next session is going to be positioning for running for governor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Questions? Thank you.
Great presentation.
Good report.
Yes. Okay. Fiber and telecom.
Yep. We have Justin Cornea here.
Okay.
Welcome, Justin.
Thanks. So, Jennifer is not feeling well, so she'll be out. So it'll just be me, and Bob will step in if and when needed. I'm Justin Cornea. I'm with the Fiber Department. I'm a senior telecommunications network administrator. So why are we here? We're proposing changes to our coarse wave division multiplexing, or CWM services and rates. We're restructuring the existing services. We're proposing restructuring our existing services to be more competitive. Other proposed changes, we're updating our digital local loop or DLL services to reflect the previously approved resolution, and we're updating our terms for contracted services. So kind of the highlights, although installing fiber optic cable is often preferred to deliver services, it can be cost prohibitive. Installing fiber for each individual service can quickly add up. This is where CWM and services like it can be optimal choice for anchor institutions such as hospitals and schools. CWM services use a specific signal or wavelength to transmit data. Each wavelength does not affect the other wavelengths, and there's no interference. Also, data transmission is protected due to the principle of single transmission optical fibers, which I know can sound intimidating, but basically it means that each service or wavelength can be thought of its own secured fiber inside of a fiber. So CWM drivers for change. Each year as a group, we review our current services to look at and improve our service offerings. Part of this process involves talking with our service providers. Through these discussions, we discovered that our rates weren't competitive enough and led to minimal requests for this particular service. We also saw that non-PUD fiber service providers, our competition, were offering more competitive rates. We hope that the new proposed changes will entice additional customers to take this service. CWM solutions. So as mentioned before, the proposed restructuring is needed in order to give our residential service providers greater flexibility to meet current and changing customer requirements. Although our current rates do have some volume discounts applied, the overall current rate is no longer competitive. The new solution is increased volume discounts, and an additional tiered service. While although this might be a loss of revenue initially, these proposed changes are necessary in order to keep us and our service providers competitive as hopefully to entice more customers to purchase the service.
Question.
Yes.
During all this stuff, are you experiencing this churn that goes on all the time within?
This was a new rate that we proposed, and we didn't have very many customers taking it the previous year.
Oh, it's just new rate. Okay.
Yeah.
So anticipated then, you know, retaining those customers once they...
Yes. Part of this is to retain current customers as well as hopefully have more customers.
Okay. Thank you.
So on this page, we have our existing CWDM services on the left side and our proposed on the right side. Don't let the word lambda scare you if you don't know what it means. We're still talking about a wavelength or a service. Lambda is just the word that we use in telecommunications to describe a wavelength. You can see that our current rates on the left only have two tiers of service. The largest discount is applied when someone orders equal to or greater than two Lambda services. And this discount is approximately 16.6%. On the right side, you can see that our proposed changes, we not only have increased the total number of service offerings to three, but we've also increased the discount to allow our service providers to be more competitive. The first service, or the base price, is the same $1,078.59. However, the second tier service now has a discount of 20%. This is up from that 16.6%. The third tier service, which is applied to customers looking to purchase 15 or more services from us, will get a 54% discount or $496.15 per service. And this is per month, by the way. Also, to clarify, these discounts are applied per order and are not cumulative for all services ordered throughout the network. Again, these changes are being designed to match or exceed our competitors' service offerings. So the other proposed changes is our DLL rate schedule update, which were just a continuation of rate increases approved in 2020. I believe that is a 3% for 5 years starting in 2020. Fiber pathway terms, there's a change contract. Contract terms up from 3 years to 7 years. This was done at the behest of customers and our service providers. There's no new non-reoccurring charges. That's it.
There's no new
non-reoccurring charges. Yep.
Just to be clear, so this is information only. And we would plan to come back with the rate changes after any comments you have or public comment that we might receive between now and the next board meeting. And this is one of those areas of the business that's much different than the other areas of the business. And we're a wholesale telecommunications provider, and it's a very competitive business. So I applaud the team and really staying on top of the different rate structures we have, the rates where... our internet service providers are trying to remain competitive and what has to change along the way to allow that to happen. So just appreciate the work. And Justin has done an awful lot of filling in on a lot of areas. Staffing in the fiber area has met some challenges. And so Justin's done a fantastic job filling in, and as he's doing again today.
Thank you.
So, yeah, any questions for Justin or Bob?
Questions?
Just one question on this, that obviously this is going to create more competition and competitive pricing. Mm-hmm. And so do we anticipate that through this it should smooth any rate increases over time? Or, where's the savings going to go?
Currently, this is a small proportion of our total budget and our revenue. So... we're hoping that this will just increase a higher take rate for this particular service.
For us, but I'm just thinking of the overall market. It makes it more competitive then. So
yep.
The other providers would have to match that or better.
Yes.
And that's all you start seeing the you know, less cost to provide the service retail. That's what I'm assuming, that that would have an impact on rates and would smooth any natural increase over time. But I could be wrong, but
I'll have
it
to
may
check
be absorbed within
that the, one for, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, I understand what we're trying to do here. I'm just throwing that out.
Yep.
You'll have a continually moving target.
Yes.
That's a given in business.
Yeah, it's business. I understand. I just thought it was
worth a comment. I agree.
Not worthy, they.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Good presentation. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Is there any other public comment at this time? Seeing nobody rushing to the microphone, with your permission, it's 5 to 11. We should move right into the business session. And the first item on the business session would be the consent agenda, which has been modified to include resolutions 9, 10, 11, and 14. Is there a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. And we're now onto the regular agenda and resolution number 12.
So I'll invite Steve Wickel up. Resolution 12 is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for the supply of station service voltage transformers for McKenzie Switchyard. Bid number 22-12564. And authorizing the station service voltage transformers for McKenzie Switchyard be obtained by negotiation. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning, Kirk. Well, great. Thanks for introducing that. I'll skip that section in my presentation here. So a little bit of background. This station service voltage transformer project is at our McKenzie Switchyard to replace end-of-life station service transformers that are currently supplied by these large 230 kV transformers that used to supply power to Alcoa. The project's being done in conjunction with a breaker replacement project that is mitigation for the Microsoft project. That breaker replacement project requires a bus outage, and this project does as well, so performing these at the same time is most efficient for hydro operations. And the crews in the yard doing the work. There are six individual station service transformers, three on the north bus, three on the south bus, so we're purchasing six pieces of equipment here. We received two bids. Neither met the delivery date or the technical specification. And if we rebid, it is possible that they get here in time for next year's construction, but it will be really close given the supply chain issues of today. Regarding the technical specification, Wesco is a distributor. They did not provide a product that met the spec, but we did talk to them, and they have another manufacturer, HVB, that does have a product that meets the specifications, so we know that these do exist out there, which is why we put it in the spec in the first place. We're not really sure why they didn't respond with a spec that met the technical specification, but they did not. So given the delivery date concern to meet our construction schedule, and given that Wesco does have a manufacturer that can meet the specification, it is district staff's recommendation to reject all bids and procure by negotiation. And with that, I'll take questions.
Commissioners, any questions?
Just one question. What's the lifespan of the transformers?
Typically, roughly 40 years.
Oh, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
So if you negotiate and you, just having some cramps.
Sorry. It's your belief that you'll then be able to meet the time frames for construction that you need at that?
That is correct. Point.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I'll invite Casey Hall up for the next one, agenda item number 13, a resolution rejecting, this one's similar, same project driver,
yeah.
Similar results. resolution rejecting the bid of Transamerican Power Products Incorporated and accepting the bid of Wireless Structures Consulting Incorporated doing business as Western Utility Telecom of Salem, Oregon. Bid number 22-12591 for the Jump Off Ridge Transmission Supply of Steel Structures.
Thank you, Kirk, for the introduction. Casey Hall, project manager. So this apparent low bid was deemed non-responsive due to the inability of the low bidder to meet the project schedule. They also included some exceptions to our contract terms in their bid. So the purchase background on this project, purchase of the steel transmission structures is one of the long lead items for the jump off bridge switchyard. So we're rebuilding that section of transmission line from McKenzie to that yard. So this is a driver in our schedule, one of our critical items, materials that needs to be delivered on time. So as such, we're recommending procuring it from the second low bid. Just for background, they were both these bids were under the engineer's estimate. So it was about $37,367 difference between the two of them, so 4%. Just a reminder, this is being funded by Microsoft, this material purchase, like all the materials for the jump off yard switcher. So any questions?
Casey, just how long will this section be? Is this a relatively long section or?
It's a little over a mile.
Mile.
Yeah.
Does it actually go up onto the hills there? I'm trying to envision the route that it's going to take.
So this 115 line at McKenzie's yard, it crosses the Malaga Highway and then runs pretty much right along the highway to the yard. Okay. Douglas has just finished the big project in there. If you've driven down there, it's in that same corridor. All those lines are pretty much right there in that running along the highway.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll invite Jim up. Agenda item number 15 is a resolution declaring Pacific Air Switch Corporation of Portland, Oregon as the sole source supplier of transmission switches for use at the district substations, hydroelectric facilities, transmission, and distribution systems.
Good morning. I'm Jim Caldwell, the senior transmission line engineer here at the district. I'm here to present the resolution as Kirk described. At this time, the district has over 100 transmission or switches on their transmission lines and associated infrastructure, and more are added with line reconfigurations and new substations. These switches consist of 12 different brands and 20 different models. As you can imagine, it's rather difficult to stock parts for that many different makes and models. Many of them are obsolete, parts are not readily available, or they take a long time to get. So staff has determined that it would be in the best interest of the district to standardize on one make of switch, which will improve reliability, operations, and availability of maintenance parts. Currently, out of the 100 switches we have three different models of switches from Pacific Air Switch, which is more commonly known as PASCOR. But out of those three models, they consist of about 35% of our switches in our system. this sole source agreement with PASCOR will increase efficiency as our crews are familiar with these switches and their maintenance procedures. And the familiarity with a single source or a single brand of switch will also help reduce your training requirements. Because if you also think about it, all those different makes and models, everything is different. They all have to be trained each time they have to go work on a switch. From an HPI perspective, providing a similar look and feel, standardized equipment minimizes confusion and risk of error during operation and maintenance. Also, having a single source single switch manufacturer will allow us to better stock parts so that when we need something in it, we have parts in stock or they're readily available and parts can be completed quickly. PASCOR is also in close proximity. They're out of the Portland area, and to our so they're in close proximity to our service area, and they stock most of the parts in their warehouses, which means we can receive the parts in days instead of weeks or months. That will help us with expeditious repairs when we have an issue. And also, PASCOR has been very responsive to our district needs, questions, and requests for information and additional support over the years. And for these reasons and many others, you know, we are recommending that we sole source with PASCOR.
Question.
This is a question for Eric. When we do this and we make a resolution to take this step, what's the possibility of challenges coming our way for not opening that up to bid?
I would just say there's always a challenge, of the potential for a challenge. We live in a country where anybody can sue anybody for anything for the most part, but not in this instance. It's actually quite common for us as a district to move in this direction, and you can see that there are two pieces of this kind of a resolution, in my view, or a consideration. The first one is what we call brand name bidding, and that is something that actually doesn't require necessarily district commission action, and that's usually what starts these things out, right? We want all of our systems to talk together. We want standardized equipment in the field for the safety of the crews and the ease of stocking the warehouse and those kinds of things. So we go through a pretty careful assessment process on the front end. Once you brand name, which is fine, you have to have justifiable business reasons for that. Then you can move into the consideration of a sole source declaration. So just because you brand name doesn't mean it's a sole source. Lots of people sell Microsoft Windows, for example, and those kinds of things. So that's always the first question. And in this case, Jim got it from me and answered it, as I recall. So if it's truly and legitimately only available from a single source of supply, and my recollection is that the answer was they only come from these guys and they don't use distributors. So we only have one opportunity to purchase, and that's from the company direct. So that's how we would handle a sole source declaration like this, as opposed to a contrasting brand name where we want a particular thing, item, brand, whatever, but it's not a sole source because they distribute it through vendors or other ways. Could talk for hours. Most of the people here know that I can talk on this, but if that answers your question, I'm quite confident in this one, actually.
I just got a question about, you know, I don't know anything about PASCOR. Can you help me with that? And the company, is it an American company? I have no information at all about it. I'm just curious, because if it's a sole source, we're...
So I looked, actually. Mm-hmm. My recollection is they were started under their present. I don't know whether there was a predecessor or something that they brought into. There was?
Yeah.
So the current model started, or the current company was in the, I would say, 94 time frame is the number that jumps out. But it looked like, and that's what I said, it looked like they had either changed or gobbled up another smaller entity or something of that nature.
But, I mean, is it an American company?
I don't know that.
I believe it's a family-owned company. I'm not positive on that, but I do believe it is a family-owned company. It started out, they were a part of Siemens. And when Siemens decided to move out of the Pacific Northwest, three of their engineers left the company and started this company in, it's actually Forest Grove, just outside of Portland. And then as the move from Siemens back in 94 happened, some of the other staff decided to jump ship and join PASCOR. And that has been operating in that fashion. And with, you know, starting from that base of those people that knew what they were doing, they've built to what they are today.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Gary.
In terms of the previous methodology, I'm assuming that we issued RFPs and that's how we ended up with 100 different switches in the warehouse. Is that right?
Yeah, it's 100 different switches on the system. Yeah. But again, 12 different brands, 20 different models. Just over the years, brands come and go. This brand buys up this brand, and so you just end up, yes. But to answer, get directly to your question, yes. Open bid or public bid, we would put out a list of specifications. Whoever could meet those specifications could bid. And we would end up with a variety of different brands, makes, models.
From a pricing perspective, are these competitively priced? Are they, whenever you go to a sole provider, you know, the risk is that the costs are going to increase. So
they actually have to provide us a certification. It's a 5-question memo that we ask anyone who's interested in a sole source declaration. One of those questions is they certify that they're providing us the lowest price, same or similar to similarly situated entities.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And they have, I should add, in this. Yeah. And I'm looking at their website, and it looks like it was all started by one guy who left, with a couple of people left Siemens. So I'm assuming it's an American company. It's privately held, it appears.
All right. Any other questions?
I would just say I really support this from a couple of perspectives. One, it's a challenge right now to get engineers, and we have engineers that are retiring, and it's also a challenge to keep a workforce focused on a major capital investment program and then be trained on all these different devices. And as the devices get upgraded, or as Jim pointed out, as they start to get old and fail, and then somebody has to troubleshoot them and then try and find spare parts if they can. So from that perspective, I really support the standardization approach. It definitely makes it more efficient and I think more reliable in our system when all is said and done. We have a quality product. We have employees that are trained to understand how to troubleshoot them and how to fix them, and much more so than, you know, it's going to take us a while to get there. I'll have to say that this is a great first step, but it doesn't, not like you change those systems out overnight. It's over time, but I really support the effort.
Yeah. So will the change out be as switches fail, or that you're not just going to go in and assign a team to replace switches?
Right now we don't have a switch replacement program, so we do replace as needed. But down the road, I could see where potentially in a few years we may have one, because some of our switches are getting pretty old. But at this point, it's replace as needed.
I have a question, but it's completely off the wall. Mm-hmm. You haven't presented to us before that I recall. Maybe you have at the commission level.
I'm sure he has.
Yeah, I have.
It's been a while. How long have you been with the utility? You're local? Who are you?
I've been here 13 years. I have presented, but it's been a while. Pre-COVID, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm born and raised local.
No relation to Duane?
No. I believe, if I remember right, his is spelled C-O. Mine is spelled, my last name is spelled C-A.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I was just,
I knew and worked with Jim before he even came to the district.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for presentation.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thanks, Jim.
Commissioners, we have resolutions 12, 13, and 15 that have been presented to us and are in need of being approved. Is there a motion to approve those three?
So moved. To approve resolutions 12, 13, and 15.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the three resolutions. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motions are carried. We are down to manager's item. Manager items. You promised none.
Yeah, I will stick to that for now.
That's sort of a leading.
If you have one, we'll take.
I don't have one.
Okay. Commissioner Travel, Lisa.
Change chairs. So we have Commissioner Arsenault attending the Waputa Telecom Workshop coming up on May 10th. May 15th through 17th is the NWPPA Annual Conference in Anchorage. And I have Commissioner Arsenault and Commissioner Smith attending. June 15, we have the Waputa Strategic Planning Committee. I don't know if it's only via Zoom or if it's a hybrid, but
I don't know.
Lisa, I'll check into that and let you know. I'm thinking it's just Zoom, but I don't know that for certain, but I'll let you know.
Okay. So if it's in person, do you need a room?
I'll let you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I have a room for Commissioner McKenna. June 16 to 21 is the APPA National Conference in Seattle. That's nice. I have everyone attending but Commissioner Berggren.
Have we received information on the day of giving option?
Yes.
I have not seen
it. It's on their website.
It's on the packet.
Yeah. I haven't seen the packet. Registration. I haven't seen. Did you? Maybe I've skipped
it. I think they sent it, but I'll look for it.
I did.
They said it.
That could be my overlook. So.
Commissioner Allen is attending the NWPPA boot camp.
That's cool.
June 26th to 30. Sounds exciting. And July 12 to 14, we have Waputa committee meetings.
Could I offer something for my fellow commissioners? You'll note that Commissioner Arso and I are signed up for the evening of the 11th. The Olympic Peninsula is hard to get to, especially with ferry service the way it is. And meetings start on the 12th midday, and getting there in a timely fashion could be a challenge if you go over on the 12th. So for those that, you know, there's no hotel reservations yet, but I noticed some are indicating they'll go on the 12th. It might be better to go on the 11th.
So let me know if you want to switch. Okay.
I would, Lisa, and I'm in the committee meeting, so I will do the 11th as well.
That's where I have you and Commissioner Arsenault arriving on the 11th. Okay, I didn't have you as attending, Commissioner McKenna, so the 11th for you.
Please.
I checked just last week for the group link for the hotel, and I haven't seen anything, and I asked Lena. So I don't know if they're going to have a link or if we're just supposed to hold rooms at their normal rate.
Normally, they put a block of rooms aside.
Yeah. I'll ping Lena again.
Lisa, as we look at the 11th, would you change our meeting with Randy Kirk and I on the 11th? We need to look for a different day, I believe, unless you want to try to pack that all on one day.
No, we can look for.
You're not coming to the Waputa meeting?
No, not that one.
He'll be at the casino.
Get that rescheduled. And July 18 to 20, Commissioner Arsenault is traveling to Arlington, Virginia for the APPA Policymakers Council. And summer fly-in, are they two separate things?
Yes.
Same thing?
They're the same.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. And that's about as far as we have any details. Did I miss anything? Do we need to add something, change something?
Nope. Looks good.
Looks good.
It's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks
so much. Thank you. Okay, we're down to commission items. Do any of the commissioners have anything to bring up? Commissioner McKenna.
First of all, let me express my appreciation for all the work that staff put into the rehab, the turbine rehab, and the central maintenance facility dedication. What a great, great event. And I just wanted to share with my fellow commissioners that what I got out of it was this ability. You know, you look forward to those opportunities where you get to just sit with staff in a very relaxed environment and get to know them and more about what they do with their work. You know, in visiting with, and I apologize, I forgot his name, from the tech shop.
Jimmy McDonald.
Just, I was overwhelmed with, you know, we talk about innovation, and I get in the habit, or the trap, not the habit, the trap of innovation being big, like hydrogen and electric vehicles and, you know, just big stuff. What really struck me is I believe that we have innovation around us all over the place from our employees, in that as I went through with the tech shop and I went through the dive shop, these employees are taking technology that was creatively developed 80, 90 years ago, and they're adapting new technology to run the old new technology even better. And I was blown away by this and how they are innovating and inventing new equipment to run the old equipment, and how they're upgrading all of our documents and keeping records. And not only that, they're training the new upcoming employees and fostering that education of new employees coming in. So that's going to continue for decades to come. I was astounded, truly, and impressed. And so I just want to let you know my viewpoint of innovation completely was rocked, I would say, a little bit by visiting with the staff. And it was a great event. And man, I just wish we could do a little bit more of that celebrating, because it anytime you can allow or you can foster staff to talk about what they're proud of and how hard they're working and what they're innovating and doing, it just seemed like a priceless day to me. It was just stupendous, and is that the right word? But it was marvelous. So I just wanted to say thanks.
I want to tag on to that just a little bit. I can't remember if it was Tony Nelson.
Yes.
Tony Nelson told the story of how they rebuilt things at Rocky Reach. The other employee, whose name I can't remember, but we'll get to it in just a minute. But Tony told a great story. But the take-home message out of that group is the impossible takes longer. Yeah, I mean, there's no give-up in that group whatsoever. I mean, it was cool. What was the employee's name?
Scott Hansen. Olaf.
Olaf. There we go.
Yeah.
Great story about how they're proud of what they do up there. They really are.
Yeah.
And a tremendous amount of appreciation for all of the staff and commissioners' work to review what facilities and equipment our employees need to do, to be innovative and to do the best work that they can do. And to now have that equipment and those facilities to do the work that they're doing. I mean, I think they were doing great work before, but their level of appreciation and pride was unbelievable. I just walked out of there blown away. So I wanted to also pass on their appreciation to the commissioners and all the leaders on staff that have pushed to update facilities and give them the best tools that they can have to do the work they need to do, to do excellent, safe work. And I walked out of there with a tremendous amount of pride.
Question. I just want to tag on as well, because what I'm going to do is give a perspective. When I first toured CEM way back, I don't know, 2008, 2009, and what I heard from the people there is, we don't have a cover for our $1 million crane. That was what their concern was. And the office was operating out of a manufactured home?
Yeah, trailer.
And you drive up, and that was it. And then you had this shop, which was a nice shop, but it was dark inside. It reminded me of going into one of these shops where I'd get my work done for my tractors. And no, I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
and,
I know you're not.
And so you had this stuff, you know, there's things around. It was a good shop. But the perspective and the change that I've seen over the years from that time and their concerns they had then just for a cover for their crane to what we have now with the office is incorporated, state of the art. I like the way that they've taken some of the old and incorporated it into the new. So it's kind of like a little museum of its own when you walk into the office and even to the exterior of the buildings where they use certain panels and stuff that's rusty and everything, but that was part of the decor. It's great design. It just shows that, you know, they had, I think it was a porthole. What is the, I can't remember the porthole.
Bushing. Yeah, Wicked bushing.
Yeah, but Wicked. Yeah. And where they put stuff like that in there, and it's just kind of cool,
yeah.
You know, to walk through there and see that. And so they did a great job in the design of the facility, in my opinion, because a little bit of pride there you can see. And so I'm really excited as well with Commissioner McKenna, because to see the old, to see the new, state of the art. I mean, they got everything they need, and nothing but smiles on the face of the employees that are working there. So, again, it was a great event. I enjoyed being part of it, and I really love the perspective of seeing what it was and what it is now today. And they did a really great job. So, good job.
You know, I'd like to thank you all for the support to do that, and we do want to do more of that. And I'd also like to add that, you know, the employees have never complained about those old facilities. They just worked in them. They never once complained about them. And so, you know, I appreciate your all support in those projects and being able to allow those to be built so the employees had facilities, equipment to do the things they do, investing in the assets the way we want them done. So appreciate all of your support there.
And, you know, to follow up on that, Kirk, and I don't mean to take my excitement and get too exuberant here, but what really struck me as I visited with tech staff and I visited with the dive staff is that these facilities, cool, you got all these cool tools and new technology and everything to work, but what they talked about was the ability to have an environment where they work together. And they really learned together, and they pondered, and how do we do this? And it got me real excited about the new service center, as we bring staff together who've been at no fault of their own working in isolation and separated by distance, I think we're going to see that same type of exuberance in our new facilities there. So when you look at Rock Island, now Rocky Reach, and the service center, man, It's amazing. So innovation galore. I'm really, really excited, really pumped up. Calm me down, Randy.
We think it was a success, Kurt.
That's what I'm gathering. I'm glad to hear
that. Food was really good, too. There's a story behind that. Food. Jeez, what
a, boy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome job there preparing the food. Catered it. Great.
Yeah, one of our employees.
Is an employee-driven
really? Yeah.
Employee-driven yeah. food.
It was the,
if you hear about how he cooks brisket, it's amazing. I'll tell you after the meeting.
Tim McMaster, he's our project manager for Powerhouse One Modernization that did all that.
Wow. Well, tell him thank you.
Yeah. Oh, I did.
Really appreciate it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Eric, you're laughing. I saw your plate full of
I went and tracked absolutely. Him down. I had to find out how he cooked that much brisket for that many people. That so guy is special. And it's amazing how he does it.
So I actually just want to say that, to echo your thoughts, that first of all, I thought it was fabulous. And yes, I had more than one full plate of food. I actually think it speaks volumes that the employee took. And you heard him say, you know, the several weekends of time. To yeah. put the time in to prepare all that food for that—that's crazy. And then I talked to him. I was there, and he was chopping up more because people were eating as fast as possible. So it was just great to see that all come together and driven by employees.
Well, then all the people that are helping. I mean, that line went fast.
Yeah.
The amount of people that were there that got fed. I mean, I was surprised how fast it went.
They could help it with Puda. Is that what you're saying? event. Well, I'm sorry to have missed it. I'm even more sorry now after hearing all of you go on and on.
There'll be another chance.
Yay. Yay, we'll look forward to it. Yeah,
service center. The bar's been set high.
Boy, I'll say.
All right. Okay, I guess I'll open back up. Follow up on delegation of action items.
So I don't have any updates from prior meetings for this meeting. I captured one, which was to provide a budget breakdown for the state budget and any information we have on how much will be spent in Chelan County. Anybody else? Did I miss any?
That's what I got.
Okay.
Oh, you got three of you checking that to make sure you don't miss any. Yep. That's good. So that was the delegation.
Yep.
Okay.
19 and 20.
Okay. Any additional public comment? Any other matters to come before the commission? We are in need of an executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCWs for approximately 30 minutes. We will move directly into executive session.
There he is.
Is the sound turned off?
Yeah, let's leave.
We need to get
Lee.
Nope.
Oh,
we're done now.
Okay.
We left.
She may or may not like what I've done.
So, Eric, do you know who the gentleman
was? I don't. I was wondering. I was wondering the same thing. Came
I suspect
in.
Justin knows.
Came in.
Yeah, I was going to say, we don't want to record it.
No. I left the meeting. I don't know that I moved the recording if you want to change that.
Stop!
So it's easy for me. I know what the X means, Lisa. I always know what the X means. There you go.
We are coming back into regular session. We met in executive session for approximately 30 minutes. It is 12:05 on May 1. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. Is there any other business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned.